I tested very positively in another sense. So negative. This morning, yeah, I tested positively toward negative, right? So, no, I tested perfectly this morning.
So does that mean he's now positive in a negative sense?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling there's something right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
From Pacifica Radio, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. Elsewhere in California on KFOI Red Bluff Redding, KKRN Round Mountain, KGOE Eureka. In Oregon on KYAQ on the Central Coast, KSO in Cottage Grove, and KEPW in Eugene. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania, WLRI, Maui, Hawaii, KAKU, Columbus, Ohio, WGRN. Palinville, New York, WLPP. New Orleans, Louisiana, WHIV. Gallup, New Mexico, KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire, WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas, KPSQ, Seattle, Washington, KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin, WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul, AM 950, KTNF, and coast to coast and around the globe, streaming on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Deprogrammed Radio, Verdant Square Radio, and Detour Talk. Blanketing the globe 5 days a week, usually hosted by Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. But today, once again, you got me. I'm Nicole Sandler, host of The Nicole Sandler Show, based at NicoleSandler.com. And obviously, Brad and Desi had no idea that Donald Trump would test positive for COVID when they decided to take a day off. But to hijack a phrase, it is what it is. With so much going on, we have an action-packed show for you today. A little later in the hour, I'll speak with Jason Leopold of BuzzFeed News about his latest blockbuster that should be front-page news everywhere. And in a few minutes, we'll check in with David Dayan of The American Prospect about the breaking COVID news. But first, let me bring you up to speed on what's happened so far. Well, talk about an October surprise. Both Donald and Melania Trump have tested positive for COVID-19. Early Thursday evening, the news broke that Hope Hicks, one of Trump's top aides, tested positive. She spent most of the week traveling with the president on Air Force One and Marine One. And then the other shoe dropped around 1 a.m. Eastern when Trump tweeted, "Tonight, at FLOTUS and I tested positive for COVID-19. We will begin our quarantine and recovery process immediately. We'll go through this together." Of course, Trump has downplayed the severity of the pandemic, often proclaiming that the virus would vanish like magic. For months, he refused to appear in public wearing a mask and has mocked Joe Biden for always wearing one. Obviously, this set off a flurry of testing. So Mike Pence and his wife, Joe and Jill Biden, and Kamala Harris and her husband all tested negative. But Senator Mike Lee, who wasn't wearing a mask when he joined Trump and other Republicans in the Rose Garden on Saturday for Trump's announcement nominating Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court, well, he tested positive. So did Father John Jenkins, the president of Notre Dame, who also attended that Saturday event at the White House. It was noted that he also did not wear a mask, but he did shake hands with a lot of the other attendees. And that obviously includes Amy Coney Barrett, who stood right next to Trump in the Rose Garden and has been visiting with Republican senators on Capitol Hill, mostly without her required mask. She also tested negative, but she should probably self-quarantine for 14 days, don't you think? On the line with us now is David Dayan. He's the executive editor of The American Prospect and author of a number of wonderful books. But today we're talking in his role as a journalist. And Dave, thank you so much for jumping in at the last minute. We got hit with a bombshell last night after learning that Hope Hicks tested positive for the COVID. We then learned at about 1 o'clock in the morning Eastern time that both Donald Trump and his wife are also positive. This obviously kind of changes everything, doesn't it? Or does it?
Yeah, I mean, it's the value of living on the West Coast when it was only 10 o'clock at night when I found this out.
Right.
So I had some time to react to it. So anyway, Yeah, it certainly changes a lot. There are implications for just sort of the government. This is one of the largest contact tracing projects that you'll ever have to deal with. The president sees hundreds of people, was at rallies with thousands of people in the period that sort of needs to be checked out. So just on a health standpoint, it's a massive undertaking. And then, of course, we have an election in a month. He's off the trail for a couple weeks.
At least.
You would think, yes. There are now indications that he has symptoms. So it certainly could be longer than that. He's 74 years old.
Yep.
He's in a higher risk category. The implications of someone becoming either incapacitated were dead, I mean, God forbid, but it could happen.
Yeah,
you know, a month before the election, there's no way to change the ballots. People have already voted. It would be utter chaos. It has not happened in our history, in the modern era of how we do these elections. It would be just a completely unprecedented, chaotic situation.
Well, everything
on top of all the other...
Right. Unprecedented
and chaotic situation.
Exactly, because right. I was about to say, everything about this administration, everything about his reign of terror has been sort of unprecedented. And then the news, as we're learning more details about this, it's kind of astounding that the timeline, because we're learning that on one hand, Kayleigh McEnany knew that Hope Hicks was not only positive, but was symptomatic before she went into the White House briefing room yesterday and had arguments with just about every reporter in there. Not only that, but they knew that Hope Hicks had tested positive and was symptomatic before Donald Trump went to this fundraiser last night with over 100 people there that he was mingling with and obviously spreading the disease.
Yeah, nobody has invited this infection more than Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that he's done, said, acted has led up to this moment and led up to him being a kind of super spreader.
Mm-hmm.
He has not taken this seriously. He has not looked out for the health of himself or anyone around him, and that extends to the entire country. He has, you know, stumped for reopening prematurely. He, called on the liberation of states. He called for schools to be reopened. He has not prepared in any meaningful way for the severity and the contagiousness of this virus. And, you know, I'm not going to yell at anybody who wants to laugh about this, because he was not but a couple days ago laughing at anyone who took precautions.
That's right.
Including Joe Biden.
That's right.
By wearing masks or practicing social distancing. So it's just a manifestation of his complete irresponsibility as president. I mean, it's almost not even ironic. It's just, this is what's going to happen.
Right. Who could have thought?
If you do this thing.
Exactly. Kind of thing. Exactly. And, you know, it's on so many levels. I mean, we saw it coming. It was just a matter of time because of his behavior. And you're right. One phrase I've seen a lot over the last few hours on social media and elsewhere is karma's a bitch. David Day, and I was just last night over dinner, I was reading your piece titled The Winter of Our Discontent in the current issue, in the September-October issue of the American Prospect magazine, that I've got the hard copy here in my hand because I'm a subscriber. And it's such a great piece that I was going to reach out to you and say, let's discuss this. The subtitle is Projecting the 78 Harrowing Days After the Election. And it's what's that period called? The interregnum or something?
Interregnum or the transition period, but clearly I wasn't creative enough. There was all sorts of things, like a Supreme Court justice dying or the president of the United States getting coronavirus. There are all a whole litany of things that I could have delved into in that piece. I'm ashamed of myself for not thinking of them.
That's the problem with a print magazine, that you have a long right. deadline, right? And so who right. would have thought that every day is like a month in a news cycle, in a normal news cycle?
Exactly.
So here we are. I mean, nobody knows what's going to happen. And that piece, I still encourage everybody to read it, because under normal circumstances, as much as you can call this administration, quote, normal, it was going to be crazy. And now there's two more things thrown into the mix. So you mentioned the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and someone else who's probably going to have to quarantine for at least 2 weeks now is the woman Donald Trump is nominating to fill Ruth's seat, Amy Coney right. Barrett, because there she was with him in the Rose Garden, right? I mean, unprotected.
She's saying that they test every day, and she says she's negative.
Oh, my.
And that she's, you know, it's, I saw legislative aides say full steam ahead on the Coney Barrett nomination. We, of course, know that Ronna Romney McDaniel has contracted coronavirus.
Yep, that just
the
broke.
Chairwoman of the RNC, and she was with Barrett and everybody on Saturday. She apparently got her diagnosis back on Monday. We have no idea how far this goes in the upper echelons of government. The people that we're talking about all commingle, congregate, interact with one another on a daily basis. And, you know, we're just not going to know. And you know, I said something on Twitter this morning. In the 1890s, Grover Cleveland had cancer of the jaw. And he secretly went out on a boat with a surgeon and had a good portion of his jaw removed without telling anybody, without telling the press where he was. And when he came back and somebody leaked the information, he and the government ruined that journalist's life and completely discredited it. So, and Grover Cleveland's brand was, "I always tell the truth." That is not Donald Trump's brand, right? So if we think that we're going to get the full story right away now, we're not. There's already indications they were trying to cover up the Hope Hicks diagnosis. We just aren't going to know a lot about what's going on. They are going to severely restrict the information. And this is, you know, for anyone who's working in high levels of government in Washington, this is a dangerous time.
It is. It's a dangerous time for anybody not. Look, you know, I'm sitting here in South Florida and I barely leave my house because I'm high risk. And I'm living in a state where we have a governor whose name has morphed from DeSantis to death sentence because he opened up the state where the numbers of cases are growing, took away all restrictions. It's insane. We don't know what's happening. That's the big point right now. We're all kind of flying blind. We can't even imagine that we're going to get any kind of semblance of truth from this administration. Just look as far back as yesterday, and they were lying to us. They lie every day. So, I mean, how do we move forward? I can't imagine there are going to be any more debates. Do you think the vice presidential debate's going to go on next week? Both Mike Pence and now Kamala Harris are saying they've tested negative.
Yeah, they've both tested negative, so it's possible it goes forward. You know, it would be just the true comeuppance of the government and politics and democracy to have a Zoom debate. It would just be like, let them do that. But, you know, we'll see what happens there. But, yeah, this really just throws so much into upheaval. I mean, I do think that because this is such an indicator of what is going on, what has been going on for the last 6 months with this virus, that politically this seems like it has to hurt Trump.
I mean, you would think.
It shows his irresponsibility. It shows his lack of attention to the virus, how he's refused to take it seriously. And now it's affected even him. So, you know, it just seems like that's the way this is going to go, and the Republican Party has sort of a choice to make, and clearly their choice is grab everything that's not laid down before we get kicked out of the majority, and that's what's going on with the Coney Barrett nomination.
Wow. There's so much up in the air. I mean, and this last 4 years has been chaotic and full of turmoil, and now as we get closer to November 3rd, things are crazy. And then, of course, as you write in the current issue of The American Prospect, the days during the transition, the lame duck period, hopefully it will be, is going to be even more chaotic. And now throwing COVID into the mix with the Trumps. And I have no illusions that we're going to get the truth about his condition from anybody, because he's lied about his health since his first presidential checkup. We really are flying blind. I guess all we can do is just move forward, you know, doing our best to get this man out of office and hopefully get back to some semblance of normalcy in this country. I don't know that it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an indicator that this virus is going to go on for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
That there's just no way to seal yourself off from this thing in a 100% airtight fashion. I mean, yeah, we know that the president is being kind of cavalier about this, but no, there are so many protections and safeguards in terms of access to a president, even in a campaign situation, in terms of him being tested every day, everyone around him being tested every day. The fact that it could get through to him shows just the virulence of this strain. And the other thing I would say, and I don't know if this is hopeful or not, is that if there was anyone in the country who could speak to the conspiracy mongers, the people who blow this off, who think it's just the flu, whatever, it would be Donald Trump. He's the only one that can say, look, I got it. This is serious. Wear a mask. You know, we protect yourself. Be careful. He's the only one that can say that and be listened to. And now that he has it, I mean, yeah, I'm asking the world here to ask some reflection from Donald Trump.
Good luck.
But he's the only one that can actually do that. And if he does, It would actually make the country a much safer place right now.
Without a doubt. And so one might say it would be better for the people of this nation if Donald Trump suffers a little bit through this, if he doesn't have just a mild case, but gets the full effects of what COVID does to you, so he could speak with authority and tell people this is real, this is dangerous, wear a damn mask and stay at home.
Right. I mean, I'm not going to wish that on anybody.
No, but
it's a terrible disease.
Yes, it is.
What we do know is that Boris Johnson's mood really shifted after he had a near-death experience. He was actually on a ventilator, I believe, in the UK, and he really changed his view on this and was pretty poignant in the aftermath. So that's that. There is a possibility there, and we need somebody to get through to the large sections of the country that have politicized mask wearing, that have dismissed the possibility of deadliness with respect to the virus. So, I'm hoping that can get across no matter how this potentially affects the president.
Absolutely. David Dayen, of course, executive editor of The American Prospect. Find him online at prospect.org. Also, check out his latest book, Monopolized, which is definitely worth the read. And if you're stuck at home, you got some downtime to read it. David Dayen, thank you so much. I always appreciate your input. And I will also suggest that everybody sign up for your newsletter at The American Prospect, because there I saw it this morning, and all it's your headline is Trump's Got It. And we know what the it is. And, oh, boy, just another day in 2020. Trump's
That's
America.
Right.
Thank you so much,
That's
Dave.
Right.
David Dayen is executive editor of The American Prospect, which you can get online at prospect.org. After a quick timeout, we're going to come back and delve into a story that should have been everywhere And it was, globally, just didn't get a whole lot of play here in the States. I wonder why. We'll find out when we talk to Jason Leopold of BuzzFeed News next. I'm Nicole Sandler, your guest host today on the Bradcast. It's Nicole Sandler filling in today for Brad Friedman, who had no idea that Donald Trump would test positive for COVID when he decided to take a day off. But now that we've covered that as much as we can right now, there's another story that in a normal world would have gotten lots of front page attention. But the noise emanating from the White House seems to push it out of prime time. So Jason Leopold is my guest today. He's a senior investigative reporter for BuzzFeed News, and he's been dubbed the FOIA terrorist by some in our government for his dogged use of the Freedom of Information Act to get documents and information for his reports. This time, the blockbuster did not arise out of a FOIA request. I honestly don't know how he got hold of this trove of Financial Crimes Enforcement Network documents, or FinCEN. And I know not to ask, or someone would probably have to kill me. But seriously, this is the biggest news story that virtually nobody is talking about. Oh my goodness, Jason. If we were living in normal times, you would have been on the front page of every newspaper everywhere for the past week or so, because a giant story that you were one of the, I'm guessing you're the lead reporter on it, because your name was at the top of a long list of bylines.
Many bylines.
But there's Jason Leopold at the top, and it's called the, and please, I've read it, but I haven't really heard it talked about much. The FinCEN files? Is that how it's pronounced? The what?
Yes, you've pronounced it correctly. And I will say, much to my surprise, I mean, if you're looking at like CNN or MSNBC or you know, say the Washington Post, you probably won't see anything there. There hasn't been. The New York Times did do on Sunday, I believe it was, a pretty big kind of follow story. So essentially, the story was revolving around the fact that we did this series, and this is just one of nine stories that we've done throughout the week.
Right.
And in fact, we have a number of other stories to roll out in the months ahead.
Wow.
And the FinCEN files, FinCEN, it's short for the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. That's an agency within the Department of Treasury that their mandate is to combat money laundering, terrorist financing, and other financial crimes. And banks basically report to them whenever they see an account that bears the hallmarks of money laundering.
Right. And we learned about these accounts, these, what are they called? The suspicious activity reports.
Suspicious activity reports.
Right. So I first learned about suspicious activity reports when paperwork started coming in regarding some of Donald Trump's activities sometime over the last 4 years. That's where I first heard of SARS, S-A-R-S. Well, that's what this is all based on. Did you, through the power of your FOIA superpowers, get these files? So you came into this huge trove of files and you went through them all.
Yes, this is not FOIA, Nicole.
It's not FOIA.
I cannot, unfortunately, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, I can't talk about sources, methods, or anything like that, but this isn't FOIA.
Okay.
I have been working on this investigation for 2 years, and last Sunday we published it, and I did. Yes, we received a trove of secret government documents, and these secret government documents are what's known as suspicious activity reports. So when you mentioned Donald Trump, yes, it was mentioned in the context back when the Wall Street Journal and others had reported that Michael Cohen, paid Stormy Daniels on behalf of, at the direction of Donald Trump. I believe that's how Michael Cohen characterized it. And the bank, I think it was First Republic Bank, had filed a SAR with Treasury, kind of alerting them to this odd transaction.
Mm-hmm.
So So 2 years ago, received these records, started working on deciding like what's the story that we can work on, because this was very, very complex. We decided to share these records with the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, also known as ICIJ.
Right.
And ICIJ is best known for their big investigation, the Panama Papers. With ICIJ, then they have a very big a journalism sort of collective, if you will, that they shared it with. So it was 110, if I'm not mistaken, newsrooms around the world. This was a project that we led, that ICIJ, was part of, that involved more than 400 journalists in 88 countries.
Wow. And because the trove of documents you received was so voluminous, it took a lot of eyes to go through it and see what was there. And you came out with, it's been every day, as you said, the story first broke on Sunday. By Monday, we noticed Monday was a bad day for the stock market, and HSBC Bank had one of the biggest nosedives of all of them, a direct result of what you uncovered. Yes.
Yes. And, that's not something I don't want to like say, yay, look,
we caused them to crash.
We reported the news, right? Yes. And then the market obviously responded. And, Their stock dropped to its lowest point in 25 years. The stock of Deutsche Bank dropped as well. JP Morgan, I believe, and a handful of other banks. So bank stocks slid after investors responded to this. And that was kind of a surprise.
So that's something you didn't expect. What I expected when I first got wind of this was, a lot of front page news stories. And I guess in the age of Donald Trump, real hard news like this gets pushed off the front pages because of the insanity coming from the White House and surrounding him. And this is a complicated story. So, today, thankfully, there's a story up at BuzzFeed, which is basically 8 takeaways. So people like me with a short attention span have an easier time in getting, the 8 things you need to know about the dark side of the world's biggest banks as revealed in the FinCEN files. And I was trying to figure out how to, in an umbrella way, wrap around what the story is about. And you do it in this story today at BuzzFeed. It's like, in the FinCEN files, BuzzFeed News and its partners revealed how the giants of Western banking move trillions of dollars in suspicious transactions, enriching themselves and their shareholders while facilitating the actions of terrorists, kleptocrats, and drug kingpins. And although it hasn't gotten the front page coverage it deserves, for instance, I just got an email from Matt Taibbi because I subscribed to his Substack newsletter. And basically, he's talking about, he said, The Revenge of the Money Launderers is the title. And his subtitle says, The FinCEN Files story reveals getting caught doesn't stop banks from taking dirty money. It may even encourage them.
Hey, would you mind sending that to me?
I will forward it to you right now.
Thank you, Nicole.
But do you find that it's sort of enabling them to do more?
Well, let me kind of break this down about what this all means, what we found. So we have this cache of records. Under the law, banks are required to alert the government, the FinCEN, the Treasury Department's agency there, whenever they see signs of money laundering. Mm-hmm. Round dollar transactions, for example, would be a sign of like money laundering or a suspicious activity, right? Because people normally deposit, if they're depositing big numbers, it's, 1,200,000 and change.
Yeah, yeah.
And in this case, when I say billion, by the way, that's what we're dealing with here.
Wow.
So that's certainly something that kind of stood out for these banks when they were reporting this. So they filed these reports. They say, we have an account. And by the way, the people that were, sorry to digress for a moment, but
no,
the people
please.
That we're talking about here, we're not talking about you and I, Nicole,
no.
who go to the You know, we go to our local bank, which most people don't even do anymore.
Right.
But we're not talking about any kind of transaction that could raise a red flag. But we're talking about here hundreds of million dollar transactions, tens of million, and in some cases even over a billion. So the banks have flagged these transactions. They can't explain what they are, what the purpose is. They file these reports. And then what we found in our two-year investigation is that there really isn't any follow-up, meaning that FinCEN doesn't follow up, law enforcement in some cases doesn't follow up, the banks don't shut down the accounts. And the banks that we're talking about, Deutsche Bank, HSBC, who have been in trouble in the past, where they have been prosecuted by the Justice Department, and then they enter into these sweetheart deals known as deferred prosecution agreements and promise to clean up their act, they are still banking the same customers.
Wow.
Now, these transactions, as we write in the story, what it exposes is the hollowness of the banking safeguards, right? And the ways in which criminals exploit it. And these profits that the banks receive as a result of moving this money, they come from drug wars, money that's embezzled from developing countries. In one case in Northern California, more than $80 million that was from a Ponzi scheme that HSBC continued to move these transactions. So I think the simplest way to sort of kind of describe this is, as you noted, it's very complex, but money laundering is a crime that makes other crimes possible. Right?
Yes.
It accelerates economic inequality. You know, people drain public funds. It undermines democracy, and it leads to the destabilization of nations.
Sure.
And right there, the banks play a key role. And so these suspicious activity reports, you know, Michael Cohen is one case. Elliot Spitzer is another case where that was a suspicious activity report that was revealed, where we learned about
his hooker. His call girl.
Prostitutes that he was hiring. But this has never been revealed publicly. Be hard pressed to find a SAR that has been out there. And we have 2,100 of them.
Oh my.
So this really provides the public with insight into a world that they have never, ever, ever seen before. And while our stories do rely heavily on these documents, we then went further. And so we took these suspicious financial transactions, and what a SAR is, if you will, it's that it has the account number, it has the name of the person, it has what the suspected activity is,
right,
or the suspicious activity. Then it has a narrative, and there's a narrative in there that, you know, the banks try to investigate what it is, where the money's coming from, what the purpose is. And they send it off. We took that and we went and interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people. We gathered more bank records from sources that we cultivated. We traveled around the world to investigate this. And so we did what the U.S. government, what FinCEN in some cases, and other law enforcement agencies have never done. And that's how we are able to actually say confidently, you know, what was taking place here.
Right. It's amazing. So we're speaking with Jason Leopold, senior investigative reporter for BuzzFeed News, who's been working on this story for 2 years and enlisted the help of an international consortium of journalists to go through all these documents and get it in order and give us this series of reports. We'll continue with Jason Leopold in a moment. I'm Nicole Sandler, in for Brad and Desi today on the broadcast. It's Nicole Sandler back in to guest host today's edition of the broadcast. While we're all still reeling from the news that Donald Trump has now tested positive for COVID-19, we're in a bit of a wait-and-see mode. We'll have to see what his symptoms are, and that will likely dictate a lot of the news between now and November 3rd. Also have to see who else gets infected. Brad will be back for the next episode and should have much more information by then. For now, let's get back to our conversation with Jason Leopold. He's a senior investigative reporter for BuzzFeed News who, with the help of a few hundred journalists around the world, has produced the FinCEN files. You can just visit FinCEN, F-I-N-C-E-N, FinCEN files. HSBC.com. Now, we mentioned HSBC and Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank has long been under fire. I'm amazed they're still standing. But like in number six in this eight things to know, it says the problems with money laundering aren't just confined to one bank or one country. The FinCEN Files investigation also documented that after they were singled out for misconduct, JP Morgan Chase, Bank of New York Mellon, HSBC, Standard Charter, and Deutsche Bank continued to move money for suspected criminals. This just goes on unabated. Is it because there's nobody overseeing these banks? Is it because there's no financial regulation anymore? Is that why?
I mean, it's a combination of everything, Nicole. I mean, you know, what happens is that, as I mentioned, they send these reports into FinCEN, right? FinCEN has a database that houses more than 300 million records. That includes cash transaction reports, right? When you make a deposit of, $10,000
or more,
right? Yeah, the bank sends something over. So they've got this massive, massive database, and it just goes in there, and it goes in there, and it goes in there, and they just collect it. I really, think that what's interesting is that they just don't have enough people to read everything. So the banks are filing millions of these reports annually. And they are available to law enforcement agencies. So let's say, the Drug Enforcement Administration wanted to kind of look at the financing around, drug cartels or drugs around, the borders. They could dip into this database and try to look for patterns, But essentially what we found is that there really isn't, after this has been filed, at least without what we've investigated, nothing happened. So you have a bank like HSBC that paid a record $1.9 billion fine when they got in trouble back in 2012. And what did they get in trouble for? Laundering money for drug cartels and terrorist organizations.
And they're still doing it.
And we found that in some cases they're still moving these suspicious funds. And, so I guess the market, reacted to that. I would like to kind of give you sort of a background. I started working on this 3.5 years ago and after Trump was inaugurated. And basically what I was working on was I was trying to follow the money, right? Congressional committees had launched an investigation or launched multiple investigations, some of which were related to, Russia's role in the presidential election, right? That's the Senate Intelligence Committee. Other committees, like one headed by Chuck Grassley, investigated the funding of the dossier. And then some other subcommittees had other investigations that they were working on. They all wanted to, in one way or another, follow the money.
Sure.
And what that means is that they wanted to see what role money played in the interference in 2016, or what role money played in the creation of the dossier. So they reached out to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, and they gave all these committees collectively, gave them a list of names and entities. And some of those names included Paul Manafort, Aris and Emin Agalarov. Those are the two people who were at the center of the famous Trump Tower meeting.
Right.
In June 2016, there were a number of Russian oligarchs on this list. And the list goes on and on.
FinCEN
gathered these records and in some cases never turned it over to Congress or these congressional committees, or turned over some. We really don't know. What we have here are the records that Congress asked for. So Congress asked for these records, and they were looking for money as it related to Trump's presidential election.
Sure.
What they missed, or what they maybe never looked at, or maybe they never looked at because they never got it, is what we just laid bare here. All this dirty money floating around that has nothing to do, in some cases, with Donald Trump. So if you recall back in 2017, I started writing about, suspicious financial transactions related to Paul Manafort, because he's in here, and other people as well. And that was the genesis of this. And so what was really kind of amazing was that, you know, this was for me the first time where I was able to kind of take on an investigation that grew out of my investigation of following the money as it relates to Trump and the people in his inner circle, but it became something bigger.
So he's definitely part of this, but he's just one cog in this giant wheel that is going on. People with a lot of money are wrapped up in this money laundering, massive international money laundering scheme for criminals, for terrorists, for drug traffickers, for the worst of the worst.
Right. Yes, that's certainly what we found in our investigation.
I noted that you did get a reaction from two members of Congress, two senators. And of course, it's the ones that I would expect. Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren have both come out in response to the work you've done and said, big red flags here. We need to do something, right? What are they saying?
Yeah. So Elizabeth Warren, she made a statement. She put out a statement on Monday, I believe, which was, again, we did not expect this. It was somewhat of a surprise. And she called for kind of immediate reform. So she's had this bill, this legislation pending since 2018 that she introduced called the, Ending the Too Big to Jail Act,
right,
which essentially would hold banks accountable or the executives accountable, getting rid of these sort of, sweetheart kind of deferred prosecution agreements, and really hold people accountable. And she called for a new unit within the Treasury Department to kind of go further than what the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network does to investigate this. You know, Bernie Sanders, you'll have to forgive me, I don't have his tweet in front of me, but
he wrote, "Here's a radical idea. Instead of arresting poor Americans, disproportionately African-American and Latino, for possessing marijuana, let's start prosecuting the crooks on Wall Street for laundering money for drug cartels, suspected terrorists, and corrupt foreign officials."
Yes.
Is that the tweet you were thinking
That's
of?
That's the tweet.
That was pretty good. He tweeted that Monday as well.
So he and Elizabeth Warren are calling for investigations and reforms. And that's not a surprise. You know, what's really amazing, Nicole, is to see what the response is around the world.
Yes.
And as I noted, you know, there are hundreds of stories that have been published around the world. And in the UK, there's already been calls for investigation. And in, I think, Thailand, there's, you know, investigations that have been called for. So the reaction outside of the U.S. is pretty amazing to watch.
Right. And here it seems
swift.
Right. It's like crickets, right? There's my cricket sound effect. And I guess it's because we've got a lot more going on here. I mean, boy, you couldn't have picked a more action-packed, filled of news cycle. But I'm still astounded that, you know, when I saw the story Sunday night, I said to David, Jason did it again. Oh, my God, he's got this huge story. It's going to be everywhere.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, no, I didn't expect it, Nicole. I mean, I honestly... As you can imagine, you know, you work on something for 2 years, and, you know, if I can just kind of give you a little bit of a backstory, you know, as we were preparing publication on Sunday, on Friday, Ruth Bader Ginsburg passed away. And that was, you know, it's sad. She was
horrible.
Obviously ill for a while, but it's still very sad, and it's a massive loss.
Yes, it is.
And so here we have this big investigation, you know, and what do you do? Because I'm still used, even though we don't live in a news cycle anymore that sort of lasts more than a few hours, I'm still very much used to, in my mind at least, thinking, you know, these news cycles will just go, they can go on and on and on. And so we thought that with Ruth Bader Ginsburg's death, there was no place for our investigation, but there was nothing we can do. And so... So we did publish it, and it was really nice to kind of do something that really didn't, in many ways, didn't have anything to do with Donald Trump. But this
Right.
was a much bigger issue, and to really kind of take on a global investigation. And so seeing the reaction and seeing the various columns that were written and where other people, experts in the industry, are calling for reforms, has been amazing. But you know, it's something that interferes with our lives every day. And I only learned that from investigating it over the past 2 years. Like, when you think about money laundering, you don't think about like how it affects you, but it actually does affect you. And it affects me, and it affects everyone. And so it is hopefully something that, you know, the stories that people can kind of wrap their arms around and understand why it's important.
Right. So Jason Leopold, the story broke of this Sunday. There have been installments and articles and more information coming every day since, just building on it. As you said, not only the stories from you guys at BuzzFeed News, but from others around the world. Other than the response from Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, have we heard anything from other American lawmakers or law enforcement? Do we know of any police investigations that are maybe going to happen out of this?
Well, let me tell you what we did hear. No, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, and that's it.
Wow.
Last month, my colleagues and I reached out to FinCEN, the Treasury Department, and we sent them a very lengthy list of questions, and we gave them what's referred to as a no surprise letter. Let them know that this is what we intend to report, that we intend to report these suspicious activity reports, show this. They never responded to us, but on September 1st, they posted a statement on their website, fincen.gov. And that statement says that they had become aware that media outlets would soon be publishing stories based on suspicious activity reports, the disclosure of which is illegal. They posted this statement on their website and said that the disclosure would threaten or could threaten national security, could put people's lives in danger, and that they were referring the matter to the Department of Justice for investigation.
Oh my God.
And as well as their own internal watchdog.
So their problem was with your investigation and with however you got these documents, which I'm not going to ask about. That's what their focus is on, rather than the crimes that these banks and the people they're and organizations they're laundering the money for.
That was their concern. And, you know, I don't know if they were concerned, you know, that we would just dump out a bunch of records. But, you know, we did include records here. And, you know, these suspicious activity reports, as I mentioned to you, they are highly sensitive. They're marked law enforcement sensitive. They're not classified. They're not top secret.
Okay.
They have a classification known as law enforcement sensitive. And they contain account numbers and lots of personable, identifiable information.
And I'm sure before you publish those, you black that stuff out. So
that's exactly what we did.
Of course you do, because you're a responsible journalist.
It was a painstaking effort to redact this. Sometimes people are just swept up in these reports that really have nothing to do with the suspicious activity. So I don't know if they feared that we were going to just dump this all out or what. But the... You know, the response was the Justice Department's going to investigate.
And
that is the extent of it. And, you know, the bank lobby, the Bank Policy Institute, put out a statement on Sunday. And, you know, they said that this is, everyone's getting all riled up for nothing. This is, you know, they tried to put this investigation together and to show that this is suspicious activity, but you know, there's another explanation perhaps, and they weren't able to really, you know, close the story and make their, you know, support their claims. But again, you know, as I mentioned, I would expect a response like that from the, you know, from the Bank Policy Institute, but these documents form the basis of our investigation. We spent 2 years interviewing hundreds and hundreds of people, whistleblowers inside banks, obtaining thousands and thousands of pages of other documents to tell this story. And when we showed it to the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists and other journalists, when they were able to see it, they all found, you know, they did their own investigations. And that's why... You know, you're just able to kind of see what's going on behind the scenes. And the reality is that dirty money, billions of dollars of, you know, of it. In fact, our calculation from just the documents we have showed $2 trillion in suspicious funds moving throughout the banking system for, you know, over the past, really it's over the past like a little more than a decade, mm-hmm. although some of these transactions go back to 1999. So it's you can imagine that if they're receiving millions of other reports, what the number is. It's
right.
Just phenomenal.
So Jason, let me ask you this. This FinCEN operation, you've got a picture of it in one of the articles, the building, which looks lovely in Washington, D.C. or thereabouts, I'm guessing. I mean, obviously, that this is where all these suspicious activity reports go to, and it's an investigative unit. Do they have a part of FinCEN that is supposed to go after the crooks, prosecute the bad guys, or is it just they gather the information and let it sit there?
You know, in some instances, well, let me tell you kind of how it worked with Paul Manafort.
Okay.
Paul Manafort was under investigation by the FBI back in, I think it was like 2013. And the FBI worked with FinCEN to get these SARs on Paul Manafort. And so, because Paul Manafort was receiving money from Viktor Yanukovych, who was more or less looting Ukraine of
right.
all their funds. So they investigate him. They have all the suspicious activity reports, and it goes into a folder, I guess, or a case file, and nothing happens at all until he becomes Donald Trump's campaign manager.
Wow.
And after he became his campaign manager, they dusted that off and they handed it to the special counsel. And we can see in our files, and my colleague and I reported this back in October 2017, they indicted him for some of the transactions in here. So,
interesting.
You know,
wow.
Does that happen with each and every case? I mean, I certainly couldn't say.
No,
but
right.
We could say that in the case of Paul Manafort, where we're talking tens of millions of dollars of money laundering, bank fraud, etc., they had everything and they were investigating, but they didn't do anything. And then when he becomes Donald Trump's campaign manager, suddenly, you know, there's an interest there. Again, not to say that he shouldn't be investigated afterwards, but the point is that what we've heard from some of our sources, some of our federal law enforcement sources, is that they just don't have the resources. They don't
right.
have the manpower, the woman power to take this on. And so it just kind of goes, it goes into a file.
And then here's my other concern, which I've been hesitant to ask about because I don't want to give anyone ideas, but I'm sure they already have the ideas. Are you concerned looking at the state of our Department of Justice today and who's running it and who's populating it? Are you afraid they're going to go after you? Because I am.
I'm not afraid, you know, that they would come after me. I mean, they've been I've been a thorn in their side for years just through this FOIA.
FOIA terrorist.
Certainly that statement that they put out on September 1st was probably, you know, concerning because it said, well, what are, you know, who are they referring to? I have
yeah.
no idea.
Right.
But no, I'm not concerned.
Okay.
I mean, it's certainly, I'm just going to continue doing what I'm doing and that's it.
And obviously, your employers at BuzzFeed News have your back. You're doing this amazing work on their behalf. I'm guessing they have good legal representation.
Yes. Yes. I mean, another area, unfortunately, that I can't really like
right.
talk
I know.
About the lawyers and stuff like that. But
you feel
know,
okay.
Yeah, this is a story. These are stories. This is a story, you know, our big story on Sunday. You know, we also have the Deutsche Bank story. I feel really, really proud of like what
should.
We did here. Because
yes.
I will tell you that I've been covering national security for, you know, for a couple of decades.
Yes.
And suddenly I find myself, you know, in this world that don't have that. I mean, I have some experience in, but this really was a team effort. So when you said at the beginning of the show, like, look at all these bylines, I mean, everyone pretty much on that list, we all worked together to kind of figure this out. There's a great story if listeners are interested. It's a data story that we have
okay.
that that came out on Sunday as well. And, you know, if it, just to make it easier, FinCENFiles.com is where we have all the stories. So this data story kind of is an explainer of how we did it, how we did everything, how we were able to sort of map out these transactions and figure out, you know, what this picture looked like. I mean, I am not a data guy. So we had a couple of two or three data guys who were working on this as well as reporting. So when I read this story, I was like, holy, we did this? Right. This is what we did? Well, oh my God. I mean, that's when it kind of like really resonated for me. Like,
holy, this is big.
This is, right. I can't believe what we have here and what we did and what they did in order to kind of, you know, pull it all together.
Well, congratulations to all of you. Your work is truly appreciated. I've been a fan of yours, you know, for...
We've been friends for the long time, Nicole.
For at least a decade. And I'm always in awe. And I'm just so proud of you. And every time you break another big story, it's like, go Jason. You're making me proud because we need more like you. I'm so proud of you. And I'm so grateful that you're doing this work because it is, in many cases, tedious. I mean, I see that pile of papers behind you again. That's all. All FOIA stuff that you're going through?
That's all the, I don't know if I told you last time, but that's the responses to all the FOIA requests that I filed.
Wow. Wow. And I saw today, even today, you're tweeting out about other FOIA responses that you've gotten, other unrelated stories that are big deals, things that you're working on. So I'm in constant awe of you, my friend.
Thank you, Nicole. Well, I've always been grateful and appreciative of your support. And sometimes that's hard to find out there. So thank you.
Well, you got it. And I adore you. And I just hate that we're a continent apart and, you know, we're COVID infected. And so we can't go anywhere. But
one day we still have to just have a whole kind of session where we just talk about music.
Yes. I'm so ready anytime. Yeah. And you can pull out your t-shirt collection, which is will probably fill your room. yeah. Jason Leopold, congratulations. You deserve so much credit for this. I hope BuzzFeed News appreciates you. I believe they do. There's a lot of reading there. So FinCENFiles.com is where you have all the documents and everything.
Centralized. And the stories and everything.
Everything right there. Jason Leopold, you are a dear friend. I'm so proud of you. And thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate it.
And we've made it to the end of another edition of The Bradcast. Barely, but we're still holding on. Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen will be back for the next episode. I'm Nicole Sandler. To them and to us, I say, good luck, world.